WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number three of the program here on Monday morning, and we're going to get into our discussion with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo in just a moment. But before we do that, a reminder, if you haven't heard already, new contest launching today. We have your chance to see the Eagles at the Sphere in Las Vegas. We're going to send you two Vegas round-trip airfare for two, two-night stay at the Venetian, two tickets to see the Eagles at the Sphere for their 50th anniversary shows, and $500 in spending money, all brought to you by our friends at the DeMello International Center in New Bedford and Tank Exchange. So how do you win? Well, we are going to play, we're not going to play the Eagles songs because we're not a music station. We're going to give you three Eagles song titles throughout the course of the day, 10 a.m., 2 p.m., 5 p.m. When you hear those codes, go to WBSM.com or the app and go to the contest page, enter them in the little box for that hour, and you'll be entered to win. It's that easy. Plus, you can get some bonus entries by following us on Facebook and signing up for the newsletter and things like that. And, of course, you just want to keep listening each and every day for those codes. Each time you enter, that's another chance at winning. So, we're going to give away all this huge big prize at the end of the contest. So, in a couple of weeks. So, every time you are hearing these codes, it's just another chance to get to win. So, you've already been listening all day long, you might as well try to make it work for you by entering those Eagles song titles. And you'll love seeing the Eagles at the Sphere. You'll have to take lots of pictures and videos and send them back to me because I am not eligible to win. Again, the Eagles at the Sphere on WBSM brought to you by DeMello International Center in New Bedford and Tank Exchange. All right, we are joined now by New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo for his regular weekly appearance with us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing all right. How was your weekend?
It was good. I actually spent some time in New Hampshire this weekend, and the weather wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Did you any particular area in New Hampshire, the mountains or all the way up?
North Conway.
Oh, my favorite town.
Madison area, which is pretty far up there in terms of, trees. And compared to, obviously, I know oftentimes we don't like to think of New Bedford as like a city in terms of, you know, Boston, a big, big city. But anytime I get to a town like North Conway or even Madison, New Hampshire, I really say, yep, New Bedford's definitely a city.
I mean, I love the mountains. I love North Conway, but I'm more of a mountains guy, I guess, which is weird because I've lived by the ocean my whole life. People are like, oh, it must be so great to live by the ocean. I'm like, I don't know. I don't go to the beach. Like, I'm not a beach person. I'd much rather be up in the mountains. So my goal was always, when I got older, to retire and grow my beard out really long, figured it'd be all white by then, move up to North Conway, New Hampshire, live in a cabin, and just play Santa Claus year-round.
But I can see that
I'm not as Santa-shaped as I used to be. So it's been a pretty busy week, and of course, now the busy time really starts for the New Bedford City Council because it is now budget season. The mayor unveiled his budget, $561.1 million, and he's trying to tell the council when he's presenting this budget that this thing is already bare bones.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know how you feel about his comments and what he was saying about the budget.
Yeah, you know, and I think that, of course, that's how he feels. I believe, obviously, when the department heads go to him, they have a lot of asks that they have, and I'm sure he does whittle it down. But I'm sure he expects, I'm sure he understands that we're going to look at it as well. Because one of the first things I do when I do get my budget book is look at the tax levy. And when you compare for this year to last year, how much more money are we going to go to the taxpayers for from last year? And then that's how I'll know. For example, last year it was like, if I remember correctly, about somewhere in the realm of $10 million. This year it looks like, if I remember my math now, somewhere around $5 or $6 million of an increase that we'll have to go to the taxpayers for. So when I see that number increasing, that to me tells me taxes will have to go up. So when I'm looking at making potential cuts, that's the number I look at and say, okay, well, we'll have to find, for example, in this particular year, $5 or $6 million to cut to make sure we're just level funded and not seeing increases, because most of, well, obviously people would like to see a decrease in their taxes, but at the very least they don't want to see their taxes go up. So that's one of the first things I look at when I open up my budget book. But one of the conversations I've had with him over the weekend about the budget is a lot of the funding that we have that is mandated. You know, he points out a lot during his speech about a lot of the funding that is required by law, a lot of the contracts that we have to fund, but a lot of the conversations I've had with him and with the CFO, and not just me, but my colleagues. I know Ward 6 Council Ryan Pereira and even our Finance Committee Chair Linda Morad has constantly brought this up about how this administration governs and what they prioritize. So, you know, bringing up conversations around whether or not we need a brand new vehicle for certain department heads. Why are certain department heads driving brand new leased vehicles? So, yes, there are certain contracts that we have to fund and have to pay by particular state or federal laws. But I don't think there's any state or federal laws that say we have to have a brand new 2025 lease. So maybe we hold off and try to maintain the vehicles that we have, or certain fleet vehicles and other situations. Those are just, you know, one example.
Well, and when you're talking about that, are you talking about, you're not talking about like equipment vehicles, you're talking about like vehicles that they're using to, you know, they're kind of their work vehicle.
Correct. And then also we talked about, you know, I've talked with him before. I got to meet for the first time the new data manager that was hired on. And it's uncomfortable to obviously now put a face and a name to the position that we did not want to add to the budget. And I know that, you know, the narrative out there that he's trying to push now is, well, look, we have less positions than we've had back in 2008. And, you know, we can really look at what was the difference between 2008 and now, and really what contributed to the decrease in staffing that we have. But right now, it's just not a good time to be adding, especially positions at the very top, Unit C positions, and these big six-figure salary positions that will continue to add to the burden that he often brings up of healthcare and pensions.
Does he present to you at all, you know, data that says, okay, we're going to add this person and add this salary, but here is the way we're going to, you know, here's what that person's going to offset in the rest of the way the budget works out. So, you know, we're not paying this person now overtime to go and do some of the work that that person will be doing now, and we're not going to be having to hire this outside firm to handle this data that now this person is going to handle. Is he able to kind of present an equation of why that's a smarter move?
Not yet with this particular position for the data manager position. He has said to me that over time he hopes that he'll be able to present or show to us why this new data management position will be beneficial and how it will pay for itself over time. But for other positions, for example, that we might have cut in the past, for example, in the solicitor's office, they have used that as an example, how costly it is to hire outside law firms or other lawyers to fund that we, if we were able to hire or pay higher for associate solicitors, that it would be more cost effective for the city. So in that regard, they have been able to showcase those findings, or even for, I think even for the us as counselors, we have pointed that out for other positions when we talked about hiring a plumber or hiring different positions like that within our other departments, whether it's DFFM, DPI, and wanting to see more of those positions added and hired.
Is there, so you mentioned that you looking at this $5 million increase and that there's the only way that you can see is to raise taxes. Does the mayor present to you another way of how it can be done, or what the plan is to try to come up with that money without having to raise taxes?
Well, that's just how it's showcased in the budget. So we have all the, on the page, it shows all the different revenue sources that we have through other sources, whether it's state-aided fund, which he's brought up that we haven't received the amount of appropriate state aid that we need. State aid still makes up about 60% of our budget, if I remember that number correctly. And then I believe from our tax levy, only about, another 32% of our budget comes from tax revenues, and then the other remaining balance from other sources. But that's how it's made up of based on the projected revenues from all the other sources, then the remaining amount has to come from that tax levy.
I mean, it would be beneficial if there was more land to be developed, if there was more space for commercial development. But as we know, New Bedford has a land problem. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that could work in favor of adding some of that would be the advanced manufacturing campus. And doesn't seem like anybody's interested in that.
Well, and I think it's we're making strides for that. And I think one of the other conversations that the city council has been pushing for is offloading a lot of the public property that we own, a lot of the city property that we own. Our Ward 2 councilor, Maria Giesta, is the city property chairperson, does a great job running the city property committee and making sure we get through a lot of the different motions that come down from the administration when they are able to put out potential RFPs for various properties that the city is willing or able to offload. And we have seen some successes, whether it's old police stations, former schools, and we're hoping that we can do more of that and potentially consolidating some of our facilities.
I mean, is there, at some point, can you see it getting to be where there might be a fire sale, for lack of a better term, where it's like, we're just going to start letting these properties go for a dollar because getting the tax revenue is more important than whatever somebody might pay up front, knowing what it's going to cost to refurbish these buildings?
Well, honestly, that's in some cases, depending on what the proposal is from a developer. I'm remembering now the former police station down in the South End, I believe we gave to a developer for a dollar. So it really depends on what the developer proposes in their request for proposal when they come to us. Is it feasible? Obviously, we're not just going to give up a public building to someone who doesn't have, you know, this particular person came forward, didn't necessarily have a lot of experience in, you know, turning around a building like this. I know, I believe it, one of my colleagues had a little concern around whether or not they were going to be able to actually complete this housing project. But we were willing to give them the opportunity because they were the only RFP that came through. The council, the majority of the council voted to pass it through and give them the building for the dollar. And oftentimes we do include a clawback provision in these contracts. Essentially, a clawback is just after a certain point, or if they don't meet certain parameters at, you know, within a certain time frame, we can just turn around and say, "Up, oh, never mind, you know, here's your dollar back, and we want our building back to maybe put it back out again for RFP or do something else with it." So there are protections in there for the public.
Has there been any conversation amongst the councilors to try to talk to the diocese about some of these church properties? That they're large pieces of property that could have, you know, multiple multi-unit buildings on them that are just sitting there not being utilized.
Yeah, that also is a motion. I believe Councilor Carney, as well as many other councilors, which I, not to take away credit from them, I can't remember all the councilors that co-sponsored that as well. I just remember Councilor Carney in particular had put that out there for the diocese. And I believe a number of my colleagues have met with them. I want, if I remember correctly, Councilors Giesta and Morat have already met with the Diocese of Fall River to begin those kind of conversations around what they are doing with these properties, and not even just necessarily whether they plan on developing there, but also around the conversation around our unhoused population. Mm-hmm. And whether or not we could utilize some of these abandoned churches for shelters or for emergency situations, just for temporary shelters in the process.
And not only that, they have parking lots in the middle of some of the most congested areas of the cities that are just roped off that, you know, residents could be parking in, and they could be utilizing that space to take some of the load off the street parking. But, you know, it's their property. They own it. It's their choice what they want to do with it. So looking at the budget, and again, as you said, you know, you're going to try and go through now and pull apart what needs to be pulled apart. One of the things that gets accused of callers on the radio sometimes is that the council makes cuts just for the sake of making cuts. Mm-hmm. That they're just going to do it because they can't let the mayor have the budget that he submits. And that doesn't seem like it's a really accurate portrayal of this process. If that's what you were doing, you wouldn't be spending weeks and weeks and weeks going through this budget. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is the part of the conversation I had with Mayor Mitchell this weekend, and I explained to him I understand his frustration around the idea, because one of the other criticisms he lobs at us is that our process isn't transparent, that we don't put out our cuts ahead of time. But, you know, his budget, he doesn't include us in his budget process of putting it together, even though we've asked to try to include us in that process to help showcase, hey, this is what we're looking for. Obviously, as we've pointed out in the past, the city council, the way our city charter is set up, we're not allowed to add to the budget. We're not allowed to, you know, in that case. So we're only allowed to cut from it. But if we were essentially included in that, the building of the budget, you might see that there were less cuts essentially, because then we're there frameworking and able to move. For example, I like to point out the Boston City Council, they're able to actually have a little more framework where, okay, if they could cut from one department and add to another. So, because we, during the budget discussion, oftentimes we talk about, for example, a department like inspectional services, which brings a lot of revenue actually into our city, but oftentimes we feel is understaffed. So sometimes we'd like to see a little more investment, a little more funding. So sometimes I think we'd like to see
more inspections done as more revenue brought in.
Yes, but we don't have enough inspectors, or sometimes we feel like the inspectors are underpaid. And I think that's why we can't find people to want to come and be inspectors, because you can get paid more somewhere else to do that. But we don't have that ability to say, okay, well, we want to take from this department and actually add more funding into inspectional services, or even, you know, the licensing board, for example. That board, it was only really two people in the licensing office. And they need more staff for the revenue they bring in. But we don't have that ability to do that. All we can do is cut. So a lot of times it looks like all we're doing is slashing for slashing's sake. But essentially, that's all we are able to do. So that's why it looks like we're just cutting to cut for cut's sake. But as I was explaining to the mayor, and I often explain to many people, what's difficult for the council, I believe, is there's 11 personalities and 11 priorities. Some of us are prioritizing public safety. Some of us are prioritizing education, housing, various different priorities. But we do have one focus, as I meant, you know, trying to bring down the tax burden. So sometimes, you know, we're looking at it and saying, okay, well, five of us might say, okay, well, we might not need that much money in the Department of Facility and Fleet Management, or we might not need that much money in DPI. But unless there's six of us that can agree on that amount in that particular department, it's not going to happen. So then it gets to the end, and there's no cuts because six of us can't agree. That's why I think over my tenure, at least on the council, you've seen a broader coalition of councilors realizing that we actually have to work together to come to a consensus that, hey, okay, well, I know that typically I don't want to cut, for example, from the police department because people misconstrued it as defunding the police. But now people are understanding we have a huge vacancy issue where we haven't hired the police force that we actually are funding. So you have millions of dollars being put into a police department that it's not actually being used. And then that pot of money is just sitting there at the end of the year for the mayor to either use to be certified for free cash to be spent on things at the end of the year. Or so a lot of times, for example, the mayor, I'm sure throughout this budget process, will continue to come on the radio and tell you that the city council cut the FICA and they cut the trash contract. And as I reminded him, we did not cut those specific things. We cut from a previous account that they've dismantled because of what we did, which was General Government Unclassified, which the acronym, which we typically refer to as the GGU. They no longer have the GGU because of what we did. And so what we did was, it was a lot easier for us just to say, okay, well, we know that this budget is inflated. We know that the mayor can move some money around, which we're not allowed to really, we're not allowed to move money from, transfer money from different departments. The mayor's the only one that has that authority. But we can make a big chunk out of this GGU, the General Government Unclassified, which, to what the mayor will explain to you, is that's where the trash contract is. That's where the FICA is. That's where the you know, pension and the taxes that we're legally obligated to pay. So you guys can't cut from there. but you can transfer money there to fund that hole. And so that was what was cut, and he was able to plug it from the areas that he predominantly would inflate, that he knows that he wouldn't be able to get six counselors to cut from.
You're just getting him to do what you can't do.
That we wouldn't be able to exactly. We can't transfer from one account to another. So, I again, as I pointed out to the mayor, I understand his frustration, but and that's why I believe he has dismantled the GGU, which in a way it kind of worked out for the public's benefit, because now that general government unclassified that was very just kind of a catch-all is more transparent now. There's actual line items to clarify this is what's actually in this budget. There's more of transparency, I guess, in that process. And I think even in this budget, there's a little more clarity, as I haven't gotten through the entire binder yet. But as we get through each budget hearing, and the public obviously has access now to the full budget online. And even when you get online, each department has a hyperlink, as opposed to how it used to be presented as a whole PDF that you have to scroll through every single page. Now you can click on each department individually to see its individual PDF in each line item.
All right, well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have the news with Mike, and then when we come back on the other side, we'll get into now the next steps of the budget. And any questions you might have, 508-996-0500. We will be right back.
President Trump wishing former President Biden well. A Connecticut woman found after 2 years missing and license plates in New York being faked.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Uber is introducing a new budget-friendly option for commuters. The rideshare company unveiled Route Share, which allows users to share a ride with up to two other passengers along busy corridors for up to 50% less than the cost of an Uber X. The service will have pickups every 20 minutes along direct routes from 6 to 10 a.m. and 4 to 8 p.m. It will be available in New York City, San Francisco, Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston, and Baltimore before expanding to more locations. More than 2 years after she went missing while hiking in Japan, the remains of a Connecticut woman have been found. Larry Kofsky has the details.
Patricia Wu Marad of Storrs, Connecticut, was described by her husband as an experienced hiker. The New York Daily News reports she was last seen checking out of a guest house on April 10, 2023. Then last month, searchers turned up several personal items and what her husband said appeared to be a femur near a Japanese village. Her husband said Saturday that DNA tests confirmed the remains were a match. It is still unknown how she died.
President Trump wishing former President Biden a fast and successful recovery following his prostate cancer diagnosis. Trump said in a post on Truth Social yesterday that both him and his wife were saddened by the news, and they send their warmest and best wishes to Jill and the family. More than 3,000 drivers across New York have to pay up the cost of driving with a fake or illegal license plate. Andrew Whitman has details.
Law enforcement across the Empire State engaged in Operation Plate Check, a statewide crackdown on fake and obstructed car tags. More than 3,000 tickets were issued, and officials also found a dozen stolen cars during the sweep. Bad plates, often called ghost plates, let drivers avoid tolls set up to bill by license plates. The NYPD has been cracking down on ghost plates, too, especially since the start of congestion pricing in Manhattan, which can also bill by license plate.
Former Vice President Mike Pence says it's a bad idea for President Trump to accept a 747 jet from Qatar to someday use as Air Force One. Scott Carr has more from Washington.
Trump administration officials have already said they plan to accept the luxury 747 from Qatar's semi-constitutional monarchy and use it for the president's travel. The former vice president tells NBC's Meet the Press accepting the jet would raise security and constitutional concerns.
Qatar has a long history of playing both sides. They support Hamas. They supported Al-Qaeda. Qatar has actually financed pro-Hamas protests on American campuses across the United States.
Pence suggests if Qatar wants to give the U.S. a gift, it could direct $400 million to infrastructure on their military base.
My hope is the president reconsiders it.
One teenager is dead and another wounded following a shooting on Saturday night in Brooklyn.
Police say they received a 911 call about two people shot outside 812 New Jersey Avenue shortly before 10 o'clock Saturday night. Officers responding to the scene found an 18-year-old man shot in the torso. He was rushed to Kings County Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. An 18-year-old woman was found with a gunshot wound to the leg. She was listed in stable condition at Brookdale University Hospital. Police are searching for the shooter.
WBSM Sports.
Red Sox lost to the Braves last night, 10-4. And the Mets head to Fenway tonight at 6:45.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast, brought to you by C Street.
Mostly cloudy, 67 today. More clouds tonight, 47. Tomorrow, clouds, 62. And Wednesday, clouds and showers, 58. I'm Mike Roberts, WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get breaking news alerts and all of our content on the WBSM app. This WBSM News update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven.
You are listening to the Tim Weisberg Show on WBSM.
And we are speaking with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. If you want to call in with a question, 508-996-0500. But we talked about the mayor's budget, what he has proposed. What are the next steps now with the council? Because I know it's going to be a long process for you now.
Yeah, so the first meeting that we have coming up on the 21st, our CFO, Bob Ekstrom, will come in. He'll give us an overview of the entire budget, and he'll give us a quick opportunity ask any questions that we have about the new setup of the budget, any questions that we have. For example, like last year when they were trying to add the innovation position, the innovation director or manager position, the administration tried to divvy it up into different departments. You know, that was our opportunity to kind of ask then, you know, what was the thought process behind that? So this is our kind of overview of the budget, how it's been divvied up or set up with the CFO. And then we'll have a number of other departments scattered out between now and June 9th. So that schedule has been released. It's our what we call the quasi committee of the whole budget hearings. They'll be at 7 p.m. In the city council chamber, and we have the live stream now, so you can even watch from home during those meetings. And then obviously if you miss it during the actual live meeting, it posts right online on the city website now.
Yeah, and these are probably, I would guess, some of your most viewed. People want to see the process, but they're probably also the most tuned out because people start to realize just how intricate this process is, and it can get over people's heads.
Well, yeah, and I think this is actually the, I hate to phrase it this way, but it's probably the most important part of our job. Mm-hmm. Our job is very important in general. So many aspects of our job. But when people talk about, what do you do as a city councilor? You know, that's one of the first questions I get when someone says, oh, what do you do for work? And I go, I usually start with, you know, my day job, the DTA. But and then from there, city council. And they go, oh, city councilor, you know, what is that? And I go, oh, you know, the first thing I usually mention is the budget. Because I think this is the actual part when people are, when you're door knocking. Obviously this is an election year, and when you're out there talking with voters, besides, you know, the housing crisis and affordability, the next question you're hearing or concern, I would say, that you're hearing from people is around taxes and the city budget. So that's why oftentimes I say this season right now, the budget season, is probably the most important aspect of our job. This budget season and meeting with the department heads is challenging, not even just for us as counselors, but I would say even for the department heads. I know oftentimes when they'll call us, and I think for them, even there a little kind of heightened sensitivity of like, what are you looking for from us? Because they are going through such a grueling process of meeting with the mayor and the CFO and the chief of staff, Neil Mello, and the COO, Christina Connolly, because as I mentioned before, they're adding all the things to their budget initially of what they need to run their department. And then it goes before that whole screening process of the CFO before it gets to the mayor and before it gets to everyone, and then it gets whittled down. And then it finally gets submitted to us. And then it's, they know that it's most likely going to get whittled down even more. So I really do oftentimes stress to them as often as possible how much I appreciate the work that they're doing, because it being, you know, working in public service is really a thankless job. And I often feel bad for our department heads because they get beat up a lot by the public and sometimes by us elected officials. So this time of year, not only just for us, but even for the department heads, it's a tough time of year, but it's the most important because this is really when your taxes are getting set for the following year, when this budget is set.
I wonder how much they play a little bit of a shell game and, you know, they put in something that they don't really need, but it would be nice to have so that you leave alone the thing that they really need. You know?
Well, yeah, I'm sure some of that happens. But at the same time, too, you know, I think one of the other aspects that I talk about with the budget as well, and one of the things I've shared, you know, with the mayor when I first got elected and I had my meeting with him. And one of the criticisms I faced, you know, as a tax and spend liberal that I always get branded with, is I don't often look to cut the budget, although I have cut significantly from the budgets during my tenure, even though that doesn't get reported a lot. But the only reason why I started cutting from the budget a lot was because I started seeing that we weren't receiving the services that a lot of our residents were expecting. And so, for example, you know, one of the news stories that we saw in the past year was about a hiring freeze. And for me, it really didn't matter, mainly because to me, for my entire two terms now as a counselor, we've been on a hiring freeze. One of the first things, you know, one of my colleagues, Counselor Morad, will do is ask for the vacancy list that we get from our personnel department to showcase, okay, the vacant jobs that we've had for the past year or past 3 years or so, how long have they been vacant for? And now you're coming to us in this budget and asking us to fill these positions. How long have they been vacant for? How much of a necessity are they actually?
Right. And the city's been operating without them. So
yes. So, you know, and again, not to say that that department doesn't need it, because as I think I pointed out in my press release, when that hiring freeze was put out, a lot of these departments oftentimes are, you know, requiring individuals within the department to do two or three jobs to keep that department up and running. But what frustrated me during the mayor's press release announcing that hiring freeze was, oh, well, people should expect longer lines and because of the council's cuts. But, you know, as I pointed out, our cuts won't affect any longer lines because these individuals, this hiring freeze, these are individuals, these positions were already vacant. There's nobody to hire because, as you know, one of the things I had stressed before in previous interviews that I've had on this radio was I've had at least two or three friends and family members that I know that have applied to work at the city and haven't even gotten called for an interview. And so, and this is long before the hiring freeze. So that I think is a lot of times the concerns that my colleagues have around these positions that are added to the budget or are included in the budget is how many of these positions are you actually trying to fill? Or to your point that you had earlier, are these positions actually just there as a placeholder?
As a shell game to get that money to put back into the...
Just to have there, just because you know, oh, the council's probably going to cut us and we need to have this money there to be able to move around for what have you. And, you know, and again, it's one of those things that, well, you have no proof that that's happening, but well, let's look at the data here. We have the data to show this position has been vacant for however many years, or a lot of times what we see too, the data shows, oh, well, the position's, you know, been vacant for this, you know, 6 months, and then they hire someone, or they, what they sometimes will happen is they'll have a transfer come in from a different department, and then that person will go back to the other position. So then that way in the system, it will show that the position
had been temporarily filled.
Yeah, temporarily filled. And then it basically resets the vacancy clock. But if you're really looking close enough, it really has been vacant that entire time. But yeah, so those are the kind of things that I look at and I say, why are we having a $500 million budget when really there are areas that we can trim down?
Right, over $500 million. So let's take a break here. We'll come back more with Council President Burgo, 508-996-0500. We'll be right back. All right, we are back to wrap things up with Council President Burgo, and it is going to be a busy week. There's quite a bit of stuff happening this week.
Yeah, so tonight we have our Finance Committee meeting at 7 p.m. in the City Council Chamber. That's chaired by Councilor at Large Linda Morad. And then tomorrow night, we actually have two committee meetings, both chaired by Councilor at Large Naomi Carney. So tomorrow night's meetings, which is Tuesday, May 20th, our first meeting at 6 p.m. is a meeting of the Committee on Veterans Affairs, Elderly, Youth, Health, Housing, and Disability Issues. And then at 7 p.m., we'll have our appointments and briefing committee. And then quickly, I also want to highlight our community neighborhood meetings. That's Tuesday, May 20th at 6:30 p.m. We have the A.J. Gomes School Neighborhood Group, which is located at 286 South 2nd Street. Buddy Andre puts that on. We don't have a counselor that necessarily goes to those, but typically Derek Baptiste, Councilor Morad, and Councilor Gomes attends those meetings. And then Wednesday, May 21st at 6 p.m., there's the Clark's Point Neighborhood Group that's located at 1000 South Rodney French Boulevard. The leader is Celine Sariva, and our counselor liaison is Ward 6 Councilor Ryan Pereira. So you have those two neighborhood groups and our three committee meetings, and I'm actually excited about the Elderly, Youth, Health, and Housing and Disability Issues Committee meeting, because that one we haven't really met at all during my tenure. So we're kind of bringing that one back to talk about some primary care for all positions, a motion that I had sent to the committee, and talk more about how we can help bring some more primary care doctors to the region, because I think anyone who's tried to get in a doctor's appointment knows that we don't have a lot of doctors in the area.
Yeah, big article in New Bedford Light today about that. And then, of course, on Thursday, the full council meeting as well.
Oh, yes, of course. And then we have our city council meeting on Thursday at 7 p.m. in the council chamber as well.
All right, we're going to take our final break, and then we'll come back and wrap things up. We'll be back in a few moments. And we're going to wrap things up with Council President Burgo. Any big Memorial Day plans?
No, just the typical Memorial Day events that we have. I believe, am I still going to be here with you when 8 a.m. on?
No, we won't be here on Memorial Day.
I mean,
you can come in if you want, but it'll be syndicated programming.
All right. Well, no, other than that, I'm just looking forward to honoring all of our veterans and those who fought for us on Memorial Day.
Yeah, it is a day to remember the fallen. So, I mean, we're not going to be here doing the show. So that's a good reason to get out there and go to some of these different observations, or even just go to the cemetery and, you know, remember those who are no longer with us. It's a